What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Witches of Gallery Place podcast. Brendan and Dama back in the show, and it is Monday, June 12th. We have a few different topics to go over today. First, we are going to go over some player news around the league, some of it relating to the Wizards, some of it not. And then we're going to get into some draft stuff at the end, go over some trade scenarios for the teams picking ahead of us. And then finally, Dama has his big board finally up to 30 guys that we'll go over. But first things first, not wasting any time. But we'll get the Wizards news out of the way first. Not really news, I guess, more rumors. But it appears that the Chris Paul situation in Phoenix is really, really weird right now. So not exactly sure what's going to happen. But if they do decide to move on from him, then it looks like a player that they have in mind as a replacement would be Monte Morris, and that's according to Jake Fisher, I think, if I remember correctly. I think that was the reporter who put that out there. So I think most Wizards fans would agree that it would be nice to find him another home and save some money. His cap hit this year is 9.8. So if they can find a way to save that money or shave it down a little bit to give them a little bit more flexibility, I think that would be to their benefit. Especially when you consider, I mean, all season long, Wizards fans are basically saying either play DeLon Wright or play Jordan Goodwin more. So it's nice to see that at least there's one suitor for Monte, again, allegedly, and hopefully there's a couple or a few more, because I think that you and I both agree that it would probably be best to move on from him.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, you gotta, you know, I think Monte's a good player, but he's just being overextended in his role as a starting point guard. You know, as a starting point guard, he's a bottom five at his position. But if he's a backup, then he's top five at his position. I think, you know, the new front office now, they gotta be able to make that distinction and move accordingly.
It was an odd year for him, and I don't place much blame on him, honestly, because, like, at least I knew the type of player that we were getting, and what were we saying, like, that offseason, that we wanted to get a point guard who could have the ability to play off ball and shoot a little bit. I think if he was a little bit of a better defender and maybe a couple inches taller, and maybe we could overlook some of that, but it just stinks when you're a defensive liability and you can't penetrate the lane and be able to create. You know, he's kind of just a self-service type guy offensively, can take a couple bounces and pull up on a mid-range, but mostly just wants to be a spot shooter, run the offense. Again, which is fine, but I think that with the types of guys that we have on our team, we want someone who can run up and down a little bit more. And some of that maybe you can point at him and say, what the hell? Some of it maybe is, and probably more so you can look at Wes, but I think that they need to go with someone a little bit more athletic, a little bit more fit to run up and down the floor, and maybe we'll get that guy in the draft, maybe we won't, but especially yeah. At 9.8 mil, I think it'd be wise to move off of him. Now, the type of deal for Phoenix that we could be looking at, I know that Cameron Payne, I think, only has $2 million guaranteed on his deal. So I don't know what the backup point guard situation is going to look like. So if you wanted to keep him at 6.5, but if you want to cut him, you can save $4.5 million, and you're only responsible for that too. So I think that would be the contract that the Wizards would like to get back in that situation. And then, I don't know, maybe a second round pick or two. But, I mean, it probably would have cost much more than that, you wouldn't think anyway.
Yeah, it's weird because I got to see what the Suns are even trying to do with Chris Paul, because you wouldn't bring Monte in at almost $10 million a year to be Chris Paul's backup making 30 when you're cap strapped.
How much time did he miss?
I'm like, okay, Ivan. What was that?
How much time did he miss this past year, Chris Paul? Because that was another part of my thinking, is if they anticipate him missing some time, then I get it.
You were kind of breaking up there. I couldn't hear you.
Oh, I was saying, I wonder how many games Chris Paul missed this past season. Because then if he missed a lot of games, that might make sense. Let me look real quick while you're talking. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, I was just, it's just like, okay, well, are you trying to trade? Because, you know, the report came out saying they waived Chris Paul, which would save them $15 million. But then now they're saying they didn't. So, like, okay, well, why are you holding this $30 million? Are you going to try to trade him to try to get back like multiple pieces? So like you just break that 30 million up into like two or three rotation players. And then maybe you reroute somebody else to bring in like a Monte Morris as your starter. That would kind of make sense to me, but I don't see Monte going there if you're going to keep Chris Paul.
Yeah. I mean, Chris Paul only did play 59 games this season, looking at it now. So, I mean, it does make some sense if you just want to make sure that if he's missing up, because that's the same thing that Monte had to do when Jamal Murray missed time, is he was that guy to start and you can get by with that. So, I mean, it kind of makes sense from that aspect. And if you only have to give up Cameron Payne in a second round pick or two, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, what are you really losing for Phoenix at that point? Because, you know, they don't want those guys taking up roster spots anyway. So,
yeah, it's just money is so tight for them right now. Taking in another 10 mil for a guy who not even going to play 30 minutes for you. It's like, they got to be very selective because they still got a whole bench to build out. So it's going to be interesting. I am curious to see what they do with point guard because I think it's a couple spots where I could see Monte making sense. You know, LA, if they move off D'Angelo Russell or, you know, it's a couple spots that, you know, that could use like just a caretaker, bring the ball up, give it to our superstar and get out of the way.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you know, we mentioned the Spurs a lot, but the Spurs could potentially be a team for him too. You know, maybe not the long-term answer there, but if you want to try and get some veterans around Wembanyama early in his career, yeah, which I would put heavy emphasis on. You know, I'm not going to go and have a Wizards 2016 offseason, but, you know, try to bring in some quality guys, at least for the first couple seasons, see where he's at, and then adjust accordingly. You know, we've talked about several times that I think one of the things that really helped John and Brad and Otto to an extent early in their careers is, for the most part, they were surrounded by veterans. I mean, even when Wall came into the league, and yeah, the locker room may have been kind of childish, but you know, there was always veterans. I mean, John Wall's rookie year, he had Kirk Heinrich, he still had Gilbert Arenas, Josh Howard, Al Thornton. When Bradley Beal came into the league, he had Trevor Ariza, Nene Okafor, and from there, they, you know, we had a veteran-oriented team for the most part. I mean, they were really the only young guys on the roster between Wall, Beal, and Otto. Everyone else was a veteran. I mean, they solidified their starting five with Markieff Morris and Marcin Gortat. The bench always had veterans, whether it was Andre Miller, Drew Gooden, Rasul Butler. So that's one of the things that these young teams got to figure out. You know, the Rockets, the Hornets, the Spurs, because eventually you don't want to keep being the team that picks at the top. Now the tank nerds and stuff will say, yes, keep doing it because eventually you end up with a good team. But the reality is if you keep drafting top five and those guys end up being good, you're not going to be able to pay everyone. And plus, even if you do, eventually I think you're going to get to a situation now where like the Hornets are at, where the best player available is Scoot Henderson. But if you're playing him and LaMelo Ball, are you going to get the best version of both of those guys by playing them together? And I'm not so sure that you're going to be able to. So it puts your franchise in tough situations like that, where the Wizards were never in that dilemma, because when they added veterans and they had their young core, it was easy to just, you know, well, maybe not so easy for Ernie to do, but in theory, it should have been easier for him to find bench pieces and fill in the gap. So that's one thing that I hope these teams picking at the top of the draft this year kind of pick up on, you know, trying to add some more veteran talent. And I say that for the sake of the young guys. So,
yeah, for sure. Because it's like you draft top five every year. That means you're losing every year. And then you're bringing in a guy with an ego that wants to be the man. So how many guys like that are you going to have on your roster that all overlap over each other and want to take 20 shots a game? Like at some point as a GM, you have to build a team. So guys that fit a role, accept that role, and star in it. If you got 5-6 guys that all want to take 20 shots because they were a top 5 draft pick, well, you're going to have some infighting. And I think you're seeing some of that with the Rockets. You know, like, you got a bunch of guys there that think they the man. And I think they got to make a decision like, okay, these are our 3 core guys that we're going to build, going forward with. And then the rest, we're going to go get veterans. We're going to go surround them with guys that know who they are, accept their role. They're not coming here to take 20 shots. They're coming here to play defense, rebound, and lead. And you get those kind of guys, and you insulate your youngins, and then you win basketball games.
Some other news that came out recently is Stephen A. apparently had a little tidbit on the James Harden situation. We know that, according to reports, he's been kind of deciding between, okay, does he want to go back to Philadelphia, or does he want to maybe sign his last big contract in Houston, which is where, I mean, he originally had his big rise to stardom once he got away from the big three there in OKC, was out of that 6-man role, and finally went to be a starter. And, I mean, prime James Harden, I mean, there really wasn't a more skilled player in the league, I feel like, at the time than prime James Harden. And this is a league that's had a lot of talented guards over the years in their prime. I mean, we had the privilege of having guys like John Wall, James Harden, Dame Lillard, Steph Curry, Westbrook, all in their primes at the same time, you know? Yeah. So it was a very competitive position. And I think that there was a point you could make an argument that James might, you know, maybe not the best, but the most skilled, you know, you could certainly make an argument for that. So for him to go back to Houston to finish out his career, kind of, you know, where it all started, maybe, but it appears that maybe he's using this as leverage to get more money, or maybe more long-term security from Philadelphia. Is maybe the Sixers would say, well, we'll give you 2 years instead of, you know, 4 or 5. And James is using Houston as leverage to get that 4. So then maybe Philadelphia gives him that 4 or 5 years that he's looking for. So I don't know what to make of the situation. I don't know what he's going to do. If he wants to win, obviously staying in Philadelphia is probably his best bet. But I could see how the Houston situation would be appealing to him. You know, if, again, it just depends on what his priorities are. If he wants to just ball and vibe for the last, you know, 3-4 years of his career, assuming it's 4 to finish out that contract, then, yeah, I mean, a very easygoing situation. The fans already love him. I mean, I feel like that couldn't be a bad situation, especially when you consider that the team around him isn't that great. They're very young. In Philadelphia, where there's all the pressure, and you know the Embiid stands are going to run the James to blame James whenever shit hits the fan, which I feel like with that team is almost inevitable. So I don't know what to make of the situation. What do you think?
Yeah, I just wonder, you know, is James in a situation now, you know, in a mind state now where he just want to be comfortable, man? Like, man, look, I done made my money. You know, I kind of like LeBron when he went to Miami, you know, I took a business trip to go win a title. It didn't happen. So now I'm going home, and, you know, I can live with that. I know I'm a first ballot Hall of Famer. Like, I can live with that. I'll just go home, make my money, and I'm comfortable. That pressure of winning a title every year isn't there. I can, you know, usher in some of the young guys with what I know. And, you know, I can have a peace of mind. I mean, I wouldn't knock him for that, you know? I wouldn't knock him for that, man. I would not knock him at all. So, or he could just be using as a leverage play to get the $200 million deal that he wants, because that's probably the only team that would be willing to offer him that type of money. And so if they do, then Philly going to have to pay up.
I don't think you could knock him for making a move like that. And I think that fans are so weird on social media and Twitter. And that's why I try not to pay attention to it, because everything is so contradicting. And it's really just annoying the way that fans hold like players and human beings up to this like weird standard. And some of it comes with the territory, but some of it is like stupid and like 13 and 14 year olds arguing all the time over stupid shit. And it's just like, oh man, who cares? But it's like, you know, not every player is going to want their career to based off whether or not they were on winning teams. If they're able to chill and be in a relaxed environment where their life isn't cause stress, they can be the main player, you know, kind of the same thing with Carmelo Anthony, you know, and I know that he probably wanted to win and he was clearly trying to ring chase at the end, but, you know, he didn't re-up with the Knicks because they thought that he thought they were going to go win a title. I mean, I'm sure those are the discussions, but realistically, I mean, he had to know there probably wasn't that big of a shot of that happening. So, and Bradley Beal, same thing. Like, you know, it's just some things are more important than others, and fans get on Bradley Beal for the same thing. I mean, Damian Lillard, I mean, sometimes guys are just comfortable where they're at, and, you know, there's something to be said for that. Well, if you don't like it, well, get mad at the management that's making these decisions. And instead of getting mad at the players, because the players are going to do what they feel is best for them. When players are making these decisions, they don't care what we think. They don't care what anyone else thinks. They're just, where am I going to be most comfortable? Who's going to pay me the most money? And the whole thing, too, about like, you know, oh, well, this player has made enough money. That's totally not the point. Because, number one, we don't know what a lot of these players do with their money. And it's, you know, it's their business, but you know, there's a lot of these players that donate this money and then after taxes and stuff, and it's like, well, how much money are they actually making? And yeah, it's still a lot compared to, you know, what the average citizen makes, right? But still, yeah. It's like fans try too much to get in players' business when it comes to this stuff, and it's just kind of annoying. But at the end of the day, James should do what, you know.
It, for me, though, it's like, it's the hypocrisy is crazy because it's like, oh, if you cared about us, the fans, you would do what I would never do, which is go somewhere else, you know, uproot your family, possibly maybe take less money to be with a quote unquote better company or in a better org. You wouldn't do that. Like if a bottom tier organization is offering me more money than anybody else, and I'm comfortable there, my kids like the schools. If I took another job paying less money, my wife would go upside my damn head. And some of my other family members probably would too. Like you just can't to think that these guys aren't like normal human beings with basic logic and reasoning that has nothing to do with what guys on Twitter are talking about. Like, It's just mind-boggling to me, and I just feel like it's like this weird entitlement that some fans think they have over players because they buy tickets.
Right. Like, guys, if you don't support the product, then don't buy the tickets. But if you buy the tickets, then what are you crying about? Because you obviously enjoy the product. So, and even if you're one of those people that doesn't enjoy tickets because you don't like the product, okay, well then, in that way, you are letting your voice be heard. But And I think that shows with like the Wizards, that the Wizards probably noticed that the attendance probably wasn't the best, the environment wasn't the best, and Ted acted accordingly, you know?
Yeah.
So
that's our ownership and management problem.
Yeah.
Talk it in.
And I'm not here to praise Ted or anything, but you know, he finally wised up. And again, it's one of those things where I genuinely feel that most owners care about what the fans think and what the league-wide perception of their organization is. I would like to think that. So if something is not going right, you know, owners in some way are going to try and adjust. I mean, this is why, and it's not just the NBA, this is NFL. This is why people are fired so often. Like head coaches, if you don't have a decent winning program by year two, then you're gone mostly. Like, people care about the results at the end of the day. So, and like the hypocrisy with, you know, if a player stays with the team forever, it's boring, it's not good for the league. But then if they go ring chase and they take less money, it's like ring chaser. And it's
your rings don't count, right? So it's like, which one do you want? You know,
according to Twitter, no championship is valid because there was always someone injured along the way, or it was the COVID year or whatever. And it's like, it doesn't matter what you think. This is down in the history books. Is it happened. So no matter what your opinion is on the subject, you got to live with it. So
I think the only thing like
everyone's such a hater.
I think that the national championship that like everybody like is like, okay, that's legitimate, is like the Dirk one in 2011, the Pistons one in 2004, I believe. And then you got like half that give credit for the LeBron Cavs one when he came back down 3-1. But even that one is kind of dicey. But outside of that, you're going to have people on either side of it with these ridiculous, silly arguments. Like, I'm even starting to see them now for the Nuggets winning the championship. Now they're saying they ain't played nobody. And I'm like, but didn't you say the Lakers was going to beat them? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. Like, a championship is a championship. Like, right. I would love to have one of those here in D.C. I don't give a damn if it's in the bubble, if it's in the pool. I don't care where it's at. Give me one, please.
Right. Again, it's like it's the sense of entitlement where it's like you think that your opinion is like truth or something like that. And I can get trying to be objective. But I mean, even this year, like everyone's like, well, Miami played the Bucks without Giannis and then they played the Knicks. Like, who's scared of the Knicks? Like, the Knicks are the 4 seed, man.
Right. Oh, like, by the way, biggest favorite, the Knicks in that series too.
Right. And it's like, no, it's not because the Heat played injured or not good teams. It's because the Heat played better than those teams and the players that were available. We can play what if scenarios all the time. We can sit here and say that every championship is valid from 2008 to 2010, because if the Wizards had their big three and they were all healthy, they would have won championships. We can say that if we want, but what's the point? Right. Like, yeah, right. You're lucky Caron Butler and Gilbert Arenas were injured that year, because other than that, the Celtics wouldn't have won that championship in 08. So, yeah, you know, what are we doing?
Weren't we the one seed going into the All-Star break? I believe Eddie Jordan was the All-Star head coach for the East.
Yeah, there we go. And Gilbert Arenas, as far as I'm concerned, could have been the best scoring guard in NBA history right now. I mean, we'd be talking about Damian Lillard, Russell Westbrook, Steph Curry. Like, well, guess who's better? Gilbert. You know, we could say that. But again, it's like, what are we trying to accomplish by having this dialogue? Right. You're just hating. You're hating. And it's like, just embrace it. It's basketball. It's fun. Anyway, the old man rant for the day. I'm sure a lot of you young listeners are like, oh, God, shut up. Draft stuff. So we have. I was going to get into this a little bit, and then I was like, we're just going to start recording because we're going to waste all of our conversation before we even start. But draft stuff is starting to heat up, even though I feel like we haven't gotten that much news. I feel like everything's been pretty consistent, but I think one of the things that isn't being talked about enough right now is I think every team picking above us, save for the Spurs, because the Spurs, I mean, the Clippers could offer Kawhi and Paul George, and the Spurs wouldn't accept that trade. You know, I mean, it's an unmovable draft pick with this type of guy. But every team after that, Charlotte to Indiana, 2 through 7, has the potential of making a deal. The Hornets could trade back from that spot. You know, instead of being put in the position of picking between Scoot or Brandon Miller, if the Blazers wanted to make sure that if they were trading that pick to a team for a veteran and the team that has the veteran is saying, well, I want my choice, then maybe the Blazers are forced to trade up to 2 to get that pick. That'll get reshipped to that veteran team so that they have the option. And then Charlotte just takes whoever falls after that. Well, and they can wipe their hands and say, hey, you know, we took the whichever one fell to us. Portland, we already know, is trying to move that number 3 pick. That much has been consistent. There's been rumors that the Rockets maybe could try and trade that pick for some veteran help. We know that would probably be Ime Udoka's preference at this point. I feel like that's all we've heard. Detroit could try to move it. Orlando has 2 picks in the lottery. Could they trade up maybe? And we know that the Pacers have multiple first round picks, I think. So they could be a team that's trying to move up as well. So, I mean, literally right now, all 2 through 7, all these teams have potentially to make a move. which could drastically shape who ends up falling to the Wizards at eight, because the ones I'm seeing the most right now are Anthony Black and Ausar Thompson. But if there's a lot of trades, perhaps neither of those guys are there. And then what do the Wizards do after that? So,
Don't even put that out there, man. Why you put that out there, man? No, don't put that out there.
I can tell you right now, I don't think that Anthony Black's going to be there either way. I think he's going to be gone.
I feel that way, too.
Think about it. The Magic, you have Markelle Fultz, Jalen Suggs, and Cole Anthony. Are either of those guys stopping you from taking Anthony Black? Hell no.
Nope.
The Pacers could put him next to Halliburton, and would that be a problem to me? No.
So, like, and I keep seeing Ausar, you know, people mocking Ausar Thompson to the Magic, and I'm like, do they need another? They need another wing with suspect shooting. Like, they need a point guard that can facilitate the ball to, you know, the Franz and the Paolo and the Wendell Carter, and then at 11 they can go get a sniper. You know what I'm saying? Like, I could definitely see Anthony Black going to them at six. Like, I honestly would, like, I probably, if I was doing a mock right now, I would probably pencil that in.
Yeah. I mean, even honestly, like, I know people talk about the Thompson twins, but I could see the Rockets biting on that at four if they keep the pick. I could see that. You know, they need a point guard. Now, again, a lot of it's going to depend on what actually happens to James Harden, because if they do get James Harden, well, maybe that's not the pick, but it's possible. Like, four through seven, any of those teams, you know, maybe not Detroit, because they took Cunningham and Ivy back to back, so maybe not Detroit, but any of those other teams before us, you can make an argument that that are fits for Anthony Black.
Yeah. Yeah, Bobby Cali, everybody wants to see these big guards, so that's what everybody wants.
If you're the Pacers and you take him, that would be the best kept secret, because all we've heard throughout this pre-draft process, I feel like, is they're going to take Walker, they're going to take Hendricks. It's going to be one of the two. So if they decide to go guard or anyone else for that matter, that would have been the best kept secret, and congrats to them.
Yeah.
So, but again, I mean, that's a pick that I'm comfortable moving, because are either of those guys franchise changers? And to me, it's like, no. So to me, that pick becomes movable. Like, you could probably trade down with Dallas and get one of those guys, for example.
Yeah, you could. You definitely could. And you know, just looking at my board, I mean, I have both of those guys just outside the top 10. So, yeah, I would – yeah, if Black and the twins are gone, and you know, the consensus top eight is gone, like I'm probably looking to make a trade back, or a trade that gives me an additional asset, you know, rotational player, young player, plus another pick, something like that.
I'm gonna be honest with you. I'm not sure Portland's gonna be able to find a deal for that number three pick. To me, if they were to trade it at this point, it would be an extreme undersell, and you would be extremely undervaluing that number three pick and what it can do for your franchise. And look, Scoot is kind of small, and his game is based on athleticism. Those guys maybe don't have the greatest longevity in the league. I mean, we can go down the list. Brandon Miller may or may not figure out an in-between game, and he could just be a taller Buddy Hield long-term. But look, I mean, these are guys that right now pre-draft, and everyone has their most value pre-draft, right? So these picks right now have a ton of value. And it's like, if you trade it for Jaylen Brown, if you trade it for Siakam, you know, does that scream like, yes, you're getting equal value there? Now, some may say yes. Yeah. I may not be so sure that you do. Like, maybe Jaylen Brown. Siakam, to me, is not the type of guy that I would want to make that move for if I'm Portland. Now, if you're giving me OG Anunoby as well, okay, I could probably talk myself into that. But it's like, for a lot of these guys, straight up, like Mikal Bridges, I'm not giving you the number three pick for Mikal Bridges. Are you high? I'm not doing that. Like, Pascal Siakam? No. Jaylen Brown? Probably not.
Would you do it for Brandon Ingram?
No.
Yeah, so it's so you view Scoot as like a all NBA level perennial all-star.
If I was the Hornets or the Blazers, that's exactly how I would be selling this pick.
And so if you're taking back just, you know, a borderline all-star or a guy on a bloated contract, it's like that's just not worth getting a guy of Scoot's caliber on a rookie deal for 4 or 5 years.
I'll say this, no matter what's in there, unless it's Pascal and OG. Now, again, financially, I'm not sure how that works. But out of every other scenario that we've heard, I'm not sure Portland's going to be able to get equal value back in return for that pick. So to me, it's like the answer, again, is to rebuild. And I feel like that's why so many people right now in the NBA or like NBA fans are just like, just rebuild, man, just rebuild. Because like we all know that whatever trade they decide to make, you're probably going to be underselling a little bit on what the value could potentially be to that franchise. And again, we don't know. Both of those guys could flop. We don't know. This is all a crapshoot. But based on the hype around this draft and the top three players this year, that pick is worth a shit ton. And if I'm Portland, I'm trying to be, okay, I have a potential to get our franchise player here and we can try and start up another competitive team, or I can trade this pick for some star level players and maybe get to the second round. And it's like, which one do you think has more value long term? And to me, it's retaining that draft pick.
Yeah, I guess if you're looking at that top three pick and you're saying, okay, these guys that are top three, projected top three, they would go number one in most other drafts. So this is really like having a number one pick. Well, then you're going to want number one value back for it. Like, so yeah, I could see it in that sense, but on the playing devil's advocate, it's like, okay, if you trade Dame, are you going to get equal value for Dame? Like at his age, I mean, he's a top 10 player, but you're not going to get nothing close to a top 10 player back when you trade him. You're going to get a bunch of, you know, spare parts.
But you know, this is where I like to draw the comparison between the Blazers and the Wizards front office, because both those teams should have traded Dame and Beal respectively 2 years ago. They both should have done it. So this is Portland's fault for waiting too long. And I don't think that they should not pull the trigger on something like that because you fear that you may not get enough value. I mean, that's your fault. What I can tell you today is that number three pick has a potential to be a franchise changing player for you. And to me, again, it's like, what do I think is best for the franchise long term, especially when you consider, okay, you get rid of Dame. Okay, well, then you have Scoot, Anthony Simons, and Shaedon Sharpe, who you just took. Like, invest in them, show them that, okay, you're the guys, and then see if it works. And you know what? It may not, but I can tell you for sure what's not going to work is keeping Damian Lillard, who is still a very talented player, and putting a bunch of star level players or role players around him and trying to aim for the second round. It screams Wizards. That's bad management. Yeah. If they trade this pick, to me, it reeks of desperation. And I hate desperate front offices.
What's the scenario where you would say, all right, let's keep Dame? Does that look like, would that have to be them being able to get a player that's better than Dame?
Well, that's impossible because I think Dame right now is, I mean, all the top point guards in the game right now, name them. I mean, Dame's probably the best point guard in the game. I mean, well, Luka maybe, but I mean.
Let me say Steph and then Dame.
But I'm going to be honest with you, I would take Dame over Luka right now. Like, I'm being honest.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's definitely a top three point guard for sure, right?
I mean, he's probably the best right now. I mean, the best.
So. Where would you – so what would – who's the player? Do you think there's a player they could get where you're like, okay, they could do something with him and Dame? Or don't think that player exists?
That's the problem. I don't think that they're going to be able to get that player. Again, if it's like Toronto where they're giving you two solid players and a former all-star, like I can get behind that. Like Pascal and OG, okay, that's two high-impact players that can seriously help and project your team. I can get behind that, but I don't think that there's any one player right now that you like. Again, we're talking LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard level player that I think would be fair return for that. And I just don't think that, you know, that they're going to be able to make something like that happen. You know, again, we're talking Jaylen Brown, who, yes, has all NBA under his belt, but I feel like whatever value you get for that pick, someone who should be all NBA on a regular basis. And I just don't know that that player is going to be able, is going to be available, quite frankly. And I don't blame other teams for not wanting to do that, because odds are teams that have those guys are trying to compete for something. So
you don't think Dame, Jaylen Brown, and hypothetically they re-signed Jeremy Grant, you don't think that's a core three that could get past round two?
No, I don't. Because then you're gutting your, I mean, look at their bench this year. Their bench is ass.
I'm just looking at what the Lakers did as a fucking, you know, play-in team in February, and then they got all the way to the Western Conference Finals. I just think more than ever, this NBA, this league is kind of wide open. So it's not like now you're not trying to beat the Kevin Durant Warriors or the LeBron Kyrie Cavs or the LeBron Heat. Like, there's no super team juggernaut out there, boogeyman, that I think anybody should really be scared of. Like, the Nuggets are really good, but, you know, with this new CBA, windows are small now. Like, they got to figure out how they're going to keep repay Jamal Murray, keep Michael Porter's max on the salary, and keep their guys. Like, so to me, it's like, all right, well, who... If you make a move, you make the right move, you might got just as good a shot as anybody else. Because who had Denver? How many people had Denver in the finals to start the year? How many people had the Heat in the finals to start the year?
Well, maybe not Miami, but I'm sure a decent amount of people had Denver. Yeah, but I get your point. I get, like, it's a lot of parity right now. And with this new CBA, it's only going to create more parity, right? So if there's a time to push all the chips in and make a move, like – Jaylen Brown, I can see. I would disagree with it, but it would be like, okay, I see what you're driving at. But literally any other player, like on their own, without any other players involved in the deal, it's a no-go for me.
Yeah, like, so like if it's just Siakam, no-go. Just Jaylen Brown, no-go.
That's a fireball offense. That's a fireball. If they trade that pick for Siakam and there's nothing else coming back in return, you fire Joe Cronin that night. It's just, I'd stop him from making that move, and I'd say, okay, that's where your mind is at. You're fired. Dame, pick two teams.
Yeah. I feel you on that. I see what you're saying, because Portland, you were a bottom five team this year. You're definitely more than one player away from contending.
This is what I'm saying. It's not like they don't have a good foundation. Their second best player is Jeremy Grant. Even if you make him the third, how many times have we said Jeremy Grant's your fourth or fifth best player?
It's not like you're the Warriors who you know, Steph got hurt, a bunch of guys got hurt, and you just had a tank year. But, you know, when healthy, you're a top six seed. Like, it's not that type of situation, you know, where you're playing with house money and you got the top, you got to pick what they ultimately end up taking Wiseman, you know, where you can move that. And now you got your superstar piece to go with. You were already being, you know, a top four roster. This Portland team is not a top four roster. So, yeah, I see what you're saying. They're not just a player away. They need like two players plus a whole new bench.
and I mean, think of it. Even if they decide to make a trade for Jaylen and then you have to pay him, or you trade for Siakam and then you got to pay him, well, then where's your money left over to improve? Who's signing with you in free agency? No one's running to Portland like they run to LA to sign with you. No one's running to Portland like they're running to Miami to sign for vet minimums. It's not happening.
Nah, they're not. You got to do it through the draft.
Exactly. So, which is why the easy answer is give Dame whatever he wants. You take back whatever you can get. Again, this is their fault, because they should have done this 2 years ago, like the Wizards should have done with Beal. This is their fault. It's bad management. They should have done it, and they didn't. And then I from an organizational optics standpoint, from like if you're a player, it's good, right? because you want to be around an organization where you feel like they're going to be loyal to you if you're loyal to them. And so, like, from that aspect, I get it. But we say all the time, this league is a business, and the Blazers have been bad at business because of their unwillingness to move him.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep, I get it. I get it. I think you've kind of talked me into them not moving that. They should blow it up. They should take Scoop, and they should be looking to build around that core.
What is Shams' tweet? Hold up.
Oh, he's talking about, I think it was that there's a playoff team in the West trying to get into the top three to get Scoop.
Yeah. Yeah, who's that team?
I think he's saying the Pelicans.
Let me see. Yeah, the Pelicans.
I just don't see what they would offer, though. Like, they don't.
Like, I'm not touching Zion right now.
You offering Brandon Ingram and
you offer Ingram and Zion, sure.
Oh, no, they ain't doing that.
Right, but that's my – see, this is my point, though, to where it's like, I'm not sure you're going to be able to get equal – like, again, it would have to be Jaylen Brown and then probably a little something else, or it has to be Siakam and OG. I would not just take Siakam. If they do it, to me, that's malpractice.
What if they gave Brandon Ingram number 14 this year, another couple future firsts, maybe another first attached to it, unprotected, for number three? Would you do that?
Repeat it again. So Ingram and what else?
Brandon Ingram, and then they have the number 14th pick this year. Mm-hmm. And then they have a couple of future firsts from, I think, still from that AD deal. So say if it was Ingram, number 14, and then two other picks.
Oh, yeah.
Would you do that for number three?
Yeah. Because you're getting those other draft assets, and you're still being able to make a pick this year, which honestly, 14, depending on who's there, like if someone really likes Max Lewis or for some reason Bilal Coulibaly is still available, that's a pick that's easily tradable to me for like a decent veteran, right? Yeah. So they still have the flexibility to be, and I think Portland still has what, like 23? So you can pack it. I mean, who knows? Maybe you can even package 14 and 23 and then try and move back up, you know? Really? So.
Yeah. That's interesting, though. That means the Pelicans aren't satisfied with where they fell this year. They're trying to make moves. They're trying to be aggressive. David Griffin over there. That's interesting.
I say this jokingly, of course, but it needs to come full circle, and they just need to trade the third pick for CJ McCollum and get him back.
Oh, if they do that, they definitely need to be. Whoever does that, needs to be fired. They definitely need to be fired for sure.
Anyway, we've waited long enough. One of the most admired draft analysts on Wizards Twitter. It is time, ladies and gentlemen. Round of applause. Dominique's big board, man. We got the 30 players. So let's get into it. Let's start with the top five. We'll go back and forth, and then we'll move to 6 through 10.
Yeah, I'll just go through it quickly, man. Obviously, number one, Victor Wembanyama.
Sure.
That's a duh, right? This is where it gets a little twisty. I got Amen Thompson at number two.
Yes, you're telling me. Yep.
Yeah, I kind of been on that for a little bit, and I was going to change my guns, and I was like, nope, I'm going to stick to it, man.
Before you get to 3, 4, and 5, let's dive into that for those that haven't heard your explanation on this. What makes him, in your opinion, like a better prospect than Scoot Henderson or Brandon Miller? Because I know those are the top three, and to be honest, I don't even think they're like all that great. But yeah. I want to hear your opinion on why you have Amen here at two over those two guys. Maybe is there something you see in those two guys that a lot of people aren't seeing, or is it just because you like Amen Thompson that much?
Yeah, so it's the latter. So I still love Scoot just as much as everybody else. I still love Brandon Miller just as much as everybody else. I just think Amen is just that I think he's a Zion level athlete, but in a 6'7", 200-pound lean frame that can play point guard.
So in a non-career ending type athleticism.
Yeah. So no weight concerns, no injury concerns, hopefully no porn star concerns. And I just think a player like that as a lead guard, who in the hell is going to be able to stay in front of him? Who? Like, even if he doesn't get a jumper, like...
Like, right, I mean, John Wall did it for years, so...
Yeah, like I just think he could potentially be one of them dudes that just lives at the rim, like a 6'7" Russell Westbrook, and he'll just live at the rim.
It's funny you said that because I was watching prime Westbrook highlights the other day. Insane, by the way. Like again, we had so many good point guards in their prime that we witnessed at the same time, like James Harden, Dame, Russ, John, Curry. We were blessed to see that generation of point guard because honestly, that might be the best time in NBA history where we had so many point guards in their prime and just, I mean, fucking killing it.
It was ridiculous. Yeah, for sure.
And what I was going to say about Westbrook is when you watch his highlights, like teams are backing off and he's still being able to attack them and acrobatically finish around the rim. Like it didn't matter how you defended him because Russ was going to get to where Russ wanted to get to. And if you backed off too much, well, he's dunking on you then. So if that's the type of athleticism that you see with him, then that's totally justifiable. Now, Russell Westbrook's athleticism is very rare. I mean, we're talking about the same level of rare as, like, you know, in the tier of Derrick Rose, John Morant. The 1%. But, you know.
Yeah. They're 1%ers. The Zions, the John Morants, Russ. I think Amen is in that tier. Especially when you're talking about how he's able to his speed with the ball, like changing directions with the ball. He's a blur, man. I haven't seen a dude at 6'7" that quick with the ball. I mean, again, the only person I can go back to is Penny Hardaway. Like lightning cat quickness with the ball, dribbling the ball, going left to right, right to left, downhill, not losing speed, and then got like a 45-inch vertical and seven-foot wingspan. Like you don't see shit like that often, man. So that's why he's number two on my board. Even without him adding a three ball. If he adds a three ball, that's a whole nother conversation. But I just think if he just add a nice little 10 to 15 footer and a floater, you got yourself an all-NBA player.
Right, like John Wall, for example, like he never really added the floater, but he added a little bit of a post game from working with Andre Miller so much. And we know, of course, I mean, that there was games where John Wall would put up like 40 points and it's like, or 30 point game, and it's like all for mid range. So he was able to develop that as his career ran. So even if he can do that, and if his athleticism ends up being in that type of tier, then yeah, I mean, that's an all NBA level player right there. So.
Yeah. For sure.
Anyway, 3 through 5.
Yeah, and then number 3, I got Brandon Miller.
Okay.
6'9", versatile scoring, shooting, forward, wing, and guard. Only real knock is, you know, how good is he playmaking, putting it on the floor, creating for others. But I just like that archetype, you know, those Jason Tatum, Paul George type guys. I think they go top 3 every draft.
Sure.
And then number 4, I got Scoot. Again, I'm still high on him. I know most people probably have him too. This is not a slight. Like, I think all these guys are number 1, number 2 overall worthy players. But yeah, Scoot, I mean, it sucks, but it is what it is. He's 6'2". That's really what he's 6'2", and he's not a shooter. And right. I think he's a great athlete, but I don't think he's an Amen Zion type athlete. Like I think he's a great athlete, but I think he's like a slight notch below that. So you're talking about a 6'2" guy, not a great shooter, not one of the best athletes you've ever seen. Where does that kind of slot him? So I got him number 4 on my board, but I still love his game. I still think he's going to be an all-star caliber player.
Sure.
And then, number 5, I have, Auster Thompson. I just think again, he's a elite level athlete, not as quick twitch as his twin with the ball in his hands, but kind of in a different way as a wing player. And then he has the playmaking chops that I think Cam Whitmore is missing, which is why I have him above Cam. Cam would be number six for me on my board. Elite athlete, of course. Not the same wingspan, not the same playmaking ability as Oscar, but only 18 years old, gets downhill, will put it on your head. Decent catch and shoot, three-point shooter, so I think there's some signs there that he can shoot it better than he did at Nova. So I got him at six. Then at seven, I got Anthony Black. You know, I did a poll earlier. That seems to be the Wiz Twitter favorite.
We already did the Cam Reddish, so I'm fully expecting him not to be there.
Not to be here, right? Yeah, I mean, for the reasons we've stated before, 6'7", point guard game. He reminds me of Josh Giddey, but with more athleticism and better on the defensive end. So if you can get that type of player at number eight, that's a goddamn home run to me. Then at number eight, I have Bilal Coulibaly. Yeah, man. I'm sold. You know, the last pod we did, I was sold then. I'm even more sold now. I just think you're talking about a guy with, you know, OG Anunoby type defense, but with, I mean, just his just an ease of athleticism and smoothness to his offensive game, where it's like, man, just give him 3 years to just develop and figure out how to use all these new superpowers he just inherited, and you got yourself a two-way maestro, man. So I got him number eight on my board.
And it's then like, for him, it's like when Peter Parker gets the Venom suit for the first time, and he's like, oh, holy shit.
I can do this. Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, so I got him number eight. At number nine, I got another curveball. This is a guy whose tape I just keep watching, and I'm just a fan because he does it offensively. He scores all three levels. He just got to figure out the decision making with his game, and I got Max Lewis number nine. He kind of reminds me of Devin Vassell, but I think he's even a little bit better off the bounce, a little bit more athletic.
More athletic. Yeah,
he's more athletic. That's yeah, so point. Yeah, 7 foot wingspan, 6'7", 7 foot wingspan, can shoot it, can drive it, can handle it, can play make a little bit. I just think you got to get him in a structure, get his decision making and processing better, get him more committed on the defensive end. But I think that's a top 10 player to me in this draft. Yeah. And then at number 10, I got Keyonte George. I'm just a believer in the shot making. Like, I think he has a Jamal Murray type skill set that, you know, the teams that don't have it want it, and the teams that have it, they're winning games. So, I like his game. He was a shot maker in high school, middle school, college. It's very likely he's going to be a shot maker in the pros too. So yeah, Keyonte top 10. I got my 11 here. What I have? Because I don't have it. Oh, okay. I got Jairus Walker rounding out the 11th pick. I think he's like an Aaron Gordon type player. He's going to come in, defend multiple positions, be able to get easy lobs, dunks, maybe hit a couple of jump shots here and there. But I like his skill set on a contended team as a starter, anchoring your defense. Number 12, I have Leonard Miller. Yeah, Leonard Miller. That's another one that people are going to probably getting my ass over, but I just think it's kind of crazy the numbers he put up for the Ignite, and at 19 years old, he put up better numbers than Walker and Taylor Hendricks, and he's playing in a pro league. They play the same position. Like, I just don't understand how he's not in lottery conversation.
Well, to be fair to those college prospects, and this is an entire different conversation that maybe we can have another day. Don't want to dive too much into this, but I mean, it's pretty well known that there's a lot of programs that can hold a player back from his true abilities. Just, yeah, I'm not disagreeing because the facts for are sure. The facts. I'm just saying.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And then I look at, I also go back and look, you know, high school, what you were doing there, what your role was, because sometimes you might miss, like you say, a college program holding a guy back. He's not getting to show everything. But Leonard Miller coming out of high school was highly touted as a wing prospect, as a guy that could be potentially a top five pick. And then he goes the Ignite route and he puts up good numbers. And then everybody's just kind of like, he's in the 20s. And I don't understand it. So
do you think that, like, players, when they choose the G League, and I don't know how you feel about this, but I feel like the guys that do the G League or that go through another outlet outside of Division One NCAA basketball, and like the international prospects are different, but I feel like they just don't get enough attention from the media as to where, like, college players, it's like, because in the US it's traditional, we watch that more. It's like, we see it all the time, as to where I feel like the average basketball fan doesn't watch, you know, G League. So how much of that goes, do you think, into the media's evaluation of these prospects when they're doing mock drafts or they're making their big boards? Because players, again, may have a shit ton of talent if they're on the Ignite, but it's easier to be put on a platform on Division One hoops, where that's been the traditional path for players for a long time.
Yeah, I think it's a proven, I think, you know, NCAA D1 basketball is a proven track record, right? Like, you know, you can project those numbers out into the NBA, whereas the Ignite playing on the G League team, people don't really know yet. Like, you're kind of like, okay, you know, you're getting the ball, you're getting 20 shots. Are you really in a structure where you're trying to do it to win the game? Or are you just, is it closer to like an AAU style where you're just running up and down and showcasing? But I'm just like, you know, if you were watching Scoot Henderson, how could you not see Leonard Miller averaging, you know, close to 20 points a game and, you know, averaging almost, you know, a double double, like as a 19-year-old, like that matters to me. So yeah, I, you know, I got him in my lottery, man. I think he's a top 12 talent in this draft, man. Let me see who else I got here. At number 13, I got Kobe Bufkin. I just think he's a two-way guard.
Got Grady Dick sliding.
I mean, he on here. He on here. Right. So I got Kobe Bufkin, man. I think he competes his ass off on both ends. He's a great shot maker, especially off the dribble. That boy got some sauce with him, man. Kind of like a Jordan Poole, but with defense, right? So like, if you can get that player at 13 or in a lot back end of the lottery, that's a home run, man. At 14, I got Jordan Hawkins, man. I just love his shot making. Like, he shoots that three ball almost like a Buddy Hield, man. It's so pretty.
I will say, this is higher than I thought you were going to have him, strictly because he seems kind of like a one-dimensional player, unless you don't see him that way.
Right, right. So based on the numbers, he is, right? Like, he's a shot maker, three-point shooter, movement shooter, but he doesn't really do anything else, rebounding, playmaking. The defense is not really there. But I think he has more to show as a ball handler, off the bounce. I think he has more to show. He did it at DeMatha. He didn't do it at UConn because I just don't think that was really his role. But I think he has that to his game. I think he can add some weight. And then you combine that with his shot making. Oh, man, you got a player. You got a player. I'm not saying he's like the next Devin Booker, but I think he can do more than what he showed at UConn.
Well, and I think, too, like that range, 14, 15, 16, like the teens is where those teams that are still probably trying to make the playoffs, right? So a team could use an NBA-ready off-platform shooter, especially if you're trying to contend. Because, again, like we talk about so much with a guy like Corey Kispert, those are guys that you just plug in and they're easy to translate because they don't step on anyone's toes offensively, right? And so you add that in with his size and his potential to be a two-way player, or even the potential for him to do a little bit more offensively. I think that justifies him going that high. I'm just surprised based on how the board's gone so far for you, because you're seeming to bank on athleticism and offensive potential. And so I don't see exactly those two with him, at least right now. So I'm surprised you had him that high.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, okay, if he turned out to be Tyler Hero and you took him number 14, are you good with that?
Well, I think Hero was picked 14th, right? And I'd say they made good return on that.
Yeah, yeah. So that's kind of how I view him. I think he got a little bit more playmaking chops than he got to show, and his jump shot is as pretty as it gets. So I think he's one of the safest picks you can make in this draft.
Yeah, just because, like, you know what you're going to get from him, like, above all else now. And that's why, like, even if he slips, it could end up being, say he slips to the late teens or early 20s and you pick him. For a GM, that's probably a safe draft pick, because you may not get the all-star star-level player, but when you're picking that low, you're not supposed to. So even if you get a guy that can be top 8, top 9, maybe even slide into a starting 5 to be a shooter. And if he gets a little bit of two-way ability, I mean, you're making out great with him going in that pick range. So 14 is kind of like that border there where maybe, maybe not. And again, for those listening, big boards are not mock drafts. It's just the order in which he finds players the most talented or valuable or best long-term, however he views it. It's just a player ranking. It's not a mock draft where we are projecting the teams. So
number 15, Matt is going to kill me for this, but I got Nick Smith Jr., man. And the only reason I got him at 15 is because of what I saw in high school, because in high school, he was the consensus number one player in his class. I mean, he was killing. I mean, his floater game inside of that free throw line, I mean, he was impeccable off the dribble, his mid range, and then he could shoot the three. He's lightning quick. I think he kind of, some of that kind of got robbed from him because he suffered a lot of injuries as a freshman. So his efficiency numbers are just terrible. Like, I mean, I'm sure Kevin would say, based on his Yoda numbers, that he's probably not even rating as a first round pick based on his efficiency numbers. But this is why I go, like, I got to go back and watch the high school stuff and kind of lean on that a little bit. I think that injury really affected him. So I got him just outside the lottery. And I think if he maxes out, I think he could be like a Tyrese Maxey type guy, where he's just a dynamo with the ball in his hands, can get you 20, a floater game score. And he can compete on that defensive end. So combo guard. So I like him at 15. I got 16. GG Jackson, man. GG Jackson, another one of those. The numbers say what the hell, you know, second round pick, but the talent, the high school tape, the skill, the toolbox. It's crazy. Like, he has a toolbox of a top 5 pick, but, you know, the decision making of an undrafted free agent. So, but he's only 18 years old. I think he's going to be the youngest player in this draft. So I think in this range, you know, that's 16 to 20. You got an extra pick, man. Like, say, like the Utah Jazz, they're sitting at 16, right? At number 9, they get their point guard. At 16, you take a GG Jackson. What do you have to lose? What do you have to lose? So I like the idea of that for them. And so, yeah, I got him number 16. Number 17, I got Taylor Hendricks. Taylor Hendricks stands. Please don't come for me. Please. I don't want no beef, man. I think he's a solid player. I think he has some a nice shooting touch. He's a good weak side shot blocker. I just have some questions about his ability to put it on the floor, to finish at the rim. He has no post game whatsoever. So I'm just kind of like, okay, well, is he just going to come in and be a 6'9 catch and shoot guy? and then play some decent help side defense. Like, that's cool, but that's a role player. And yeah, and his high school pedigree is not a lot. Like, he wasn't even a top 60 player in high school. So, yeah, I think he's going to be a solid role player, you know, like a PJ Washington type. But I'm just not seeing. I'm not seeing the top 10. I'm not seeing it. Cason Wallace, number 18. I think he's a safe pick. Can play defense, two-way player. I think he's going to compete on both ends. I just don't see the on-ball primary creation that I want to see out of a point guard, especially one that's going to be considered on the smaller end for today's standards.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see any, like, elite athleticism traits. I think he's just kind of like an average athlete. It's nothing that sticks out to me about his game as a lead guard where I'm like, wow, like he could be one of the best in the league at that. Like, he's just okay. He's just okay. Like, he's definitely an NBA player. He's, again, probably one of the safest players you're going to pick, because you know he's not going to bust with his ability to defend and get after guys at the point of attack. But if you're telling me that's my future starting point guard for the next 10 years, I'm looking to upgrade. Sure. So, yeah. At number 19, man, I got Pods out of Santa Clara, man. I just think the program there, man, they just make pros. Like, obviously with Jalen Williams last year, I'm not comparing him to Jalen Williams, but the shooting, all three levels, the passing, and his rebounding numbers are hella high for a 6'5", 6'6" guard. And usually that translates on the next level. And that, watching him in the scrimmages at the combine, man, I like what I saw. I just think he's one of them dudes that whatever role you want him to play offensively, he can do it. He can play on the ball, off the ball. You know, he could be a scorer. He could be a pass man. Like, he can do it all. I really like his game, and any team that gets him in that, if you get him in the 20 to 30 range, I think you're getting a steal. At number 20, Jamie Jacquez Jr. out of UCLA. Love his fucking game, man. This is one of my favorite players in this draft. I would bang the table for him. If the Wizards could somehow get another pick in the 20s area, this would be a guy I would be targeting. I just think this dude just gets after it. Like, when we talk about dog, he got it. Dog with a mustache, man. Like, he got it, man. Because that dude, defensively, he gets after it. He's not a great shooter, but I think his mechanics are sound enough where he can add shooting. But, man, like, he do every damn thing else.
I'm starting that description now because I thought Denny was the same thing, and Denny still can't shoot.
I think he's a better shooter than what Denny was coming out. Much better shooter. Because he can do it off the bounce, and he got in-between game. I've even seen him shoot some turnaround fadeaways and shit. Like, he kind of plays he kind of plays like Jimmy Butler. Like, just one of them dudes that just – he going to find a way out of no way. It's not the sexiest or prettiest game, but he just finds a way because he just wanted more than you. And like I said, he fights his ass off on the defensive end.
What year is he?
He's a junior, I believe.
So you would take a player with – so is he 21 or 22?
No, I'm sorry. He's a senior. He's actually a senior.
Jesus and Christ.
How old is he?
Well, it's probably 23.
Yeah, he's 22, so he'll be 22 on draft day.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, yeah,
he's 22. So I guess yeah. So he's older, but like I said, that's how much a fan of his game I am, because I usually don't take guys top 20 at his age. But when I say that dude gets after it, man, he gets after it. So,
well, in that defense too, like listening to Rafael Barlow, I think he and a lot of the draft people are kind of like, once you get like to the 15 range for the rest of the first round, it's just kind of like, eh. Like, it's not that big of a difference.
You're playing with house money at this point, because now you got teams that got extra picks, or you got contenders that's looking for day one contributors. You know what I'm saying? The Miami Heats and all those guys, they looking for guys that can come in and play right away. I think right. Jasquez, he can do that day one. He could play for the Heat.
Right.
At number 21, a similar type player, upperclassman, gets after it on both ends. I got Kobe Jones, man. I love his game. He kind of reminds me of like Malcolm Brogdon. He can do a little bit of everything. He can play on the ball, off the ball. He defends. He can shoot the ball well enough. And he competes. I just like those type of players in this range for, again, teams that are maybe, like I say, got an extra pick. You're playing with house money, or you're a contender and you just need a day one contributor.
And we're at 21 now, so I wonder, is Jalen Hood-Schifino going to fall out of your top 30?
We're going to see. At number 22, I got Bryce Insibol. I think he's a TJ Warren type of scorer at the power forward position. He's going to be able to get a bucket. I'm just not sure what the hell else he's going to be able to do, because he wasn't doing it at Ohio State. So he's 22 for me. At 23, old Grady Dick. I think he's kind of like a Kevin Herter. That's kind of the range where I remember, if I remember correctly, Kevin Herter went like a movement shooter.
I think Herter was like 18 or 19 or something. I'll look it up while you're talking.
You want top 20?
I don't know. Let me see while you're.
Yeah, but. Anywho, I like Grady Dick, man. I think he's going to contribute to a team, obviously, as a shooter. What else he does, I'm not sure. But I think he's going to be a solid 10-year-plus pro. And like I say, this range here in the 20s, this the range where, like I said, you're playing with house money, you just want a contributor.
Yeah, I heard her went 19th.
Went 19. Okay. I think, what draft year was that?
18. So I think that's 18. The Ja Morant, R.J. Barrett. Or no, that's 19. 18 was who? Was 18 DeAndre? No, that was 17.
18 was 18 was Ayton and Luka and Trae Young. That was that draft, the 18 draft.
Okay.
Yeah, so, yeah. Okay. I kind of got them in the same range. I think they're going to be good players. Maybe a starter eventually. Maybe not. But, at his lowest end, he's going to shoot the ball for you. 24, same thing with like a Jet Howard. That's who I got, 24, Jet Howard. He's got kind of some sauce with him off the dribble, but he don't really want to defend at all. Like, he doesn't compete on that end whatsoever. He shoots it well from three, but that's pretty much all he wants to do at 6'8". At 25, I got Jalen Hood. Again, this is that range with him where I feel like you're playing with house money. You want to take a shot on a big 6'6" point guard that was highly inefficient his freshman year. This is where you do it. All right? You got that extra pick. Just take a gamble, man. I think he can play. He just wasn't consistent enough for me. He had like two or three good games. The most notable one, I think he dropped 35 against Purdue. But other than that, man, it was a lot of 4-for-12, 2-for-10, you know, 4 turnovers, 5 turnover type nights. And he got to clean that up. He's got to clean that up. But he has the tools. He definitely has the tools. 26, I got Chris Murray, upperclassman, junior, for all the same reasons I kind of mentioned with the other upperclassmen. Like, this range here, you're just trying to get a contributor. I think Chris Murray is going to help a contender with his length, his shooting ability. I just think he's going to help a team. 27, I got Julian Strother out of Gonzaga, another upperclassman, shooter, had a 40-point game where I think he hit 10 threes. It was crazy. I just love his shot making, man. I got him. I got him first round. Number 28, I got Dark Whitehead. wing player kind of reminds me a little bit of Harrison Barnes. The issue I have with him, he would be higher if he didn't have an injury concerns, man. He's had so many injuries. I'm just like, man, is he going to make it? But I like his skill set as a shooter, potentially more if he can stay healthy. At 29, I got Trice Jackson-Davis. He's probably the only center guy I project as a center, top 30 as a first round guy.
I'll say you haven't even mentioned Derek Lively, so yeah,
he ain't gonna make it, dog. He ain't gonna make it. I'm not saying he's not gonna be solid or can make a roster and play, but to me, he projects more as like a backup center, and I'm not taking a backup center in the first round. I'm just not doing it.
It's crazy considering like a lot and most mock drafts that I've seen have him as like a top, like have him as a lottery pick, you know, in that 10 to 14 range.
That's crazy. I ain't doing that. I ain't doing that, man. If you're going lottery as a center, you better have some offensive game. You better be able to shoot a little 15 footer, hit a fadeaway off the block, face up game, something like, no, I'm not. Nah. But yeah, I like Trice Jackson-Davis at 29, senior. He's old as hell, but he's a big body. I think he's kind of like the Brandon Clark of this draft. He can come in and just execute, and he can guard. He's strong as a fucking ox. He dunking everything. He's got some passing chops. I think he averaged like four assists per 36 minutes, something like that. So I just think he's a solid overall big that again, at this point in the draft, you're talking contenders who just need to plug roles. And I think he can do that. At 30, shout out to my guy, he's gonna like this one. I got Kobe Brown, man. Kobe Brown, 6'8" forward. Again, old as hell. He's 23. But you watch his tape, man, and he almost looks like a I don't even know. He's like an Antoine Walker, Draymond Green hybrid. Like, he's just doing every damn thing, man. And for a dude at his size, he's hella nimble on his feet, can score all three levels. He defends, he passes well, he rebounds, and he's a bully on the block. Bully. So, again, at this point in the draft, I could see a team like the Grizzlies taking a guy like that. And then all of a sudden you look up and he makes a all rookie team. So that's my top 30. I know some people gonna cook me to the stands, Taylor Hendricks, Cason Wallace, the Grady Dick stands. I'm sorry, y'all. I don't mean no harm, but that's my list.
Yeah, well, I mean that's the thing about NBA big boards and mock drafts is, you know, it's just your opinion or what you think will happen. And I think it's good to have all these mixed opinions. A lot of people can get kind of defensive over a lot of stuff, and it really isn't that deep. But, you know, I think it's good to have a platform and to share. Everyone should have a voice. Now, people may severely disagree with it, but always good to be authentic and have original thought instead of always going with the grain. So,
I'm not a consensus big boy guy. I don't do that.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about a couple guys that you didn't mention before we get off this. A couple of big men here. Where do you see where is this fellow? Yeah, James Naji from Nigeria, and then Tristan Vuka Vucevic. Where do you see them falling, and would you consider them second round players for us? Because I mean, I don't even know what's going on with Nzosa at this point. So, and if we're going to move on from Gafford, then you know we're going to need a backup. So, provided we keep KP. So,
yeah, I was just getting ready to say, like, these hyper athletic defensive bigs. Right, that come out of, you know, Nigeria or the Congo. Like, I like them as prospects, but that's just not where I'm going first round. I'm not going there first round. I need to see a little bit more skill already there. And I get he's only 18, but Yeah, I need to see a little bit more skill before I, you know, to put you in that top 30. But I like it as a developmental, you know, prospect, second round. Again, you're playing with house money. You need a big, take it. You, if you're looking for a backup big, I feel like the top of that second round is the ideal spot to get it. That pick 31 through 45, you can go get your backup center right there. So
I could see us using one of our second round picks, and then maybe in a trade, whenever we decide to make one, maybe you attach the rights to Yannick and Zosa in there, just to give the other team a little something. I mean, we had the same thing with Yusuf Sanon, who was like traded, I think probably like three times. I don't know where his rights are at this point. I thought it was New York originally, but maybe it's Atlanta now. I don't know. So it's somewhere out there. So
yeah, for sure, for sure.
It's like, I feel like when you get drafted like that, like I don't know why NBA teams do this. Like you need to have pretty good intel, and that player is probably gonna like you need to have the understanding that that player is gonna need to be NBA ready like after one season. Like, he's going to have to be able to come over and play in summer league and go to camp and all that. Like, we don't even know what – like, we never knew when Sanon was coming. We don't know when Nzosa's coming. It was just like, Tommy, what are you doing, brother?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And as far as Vucevic, Tristan Vucevic, I was close to putting him in the top 30, man, because I had went back and watched him at the combine. I was like, damn, you know – he's shooting that ball as a 7-footer, as a legit 7-footer, man. 20 years old, like I was going back and forth between him and Trice as top 30 first round guys. I would probably put him like right at the top of that second round, man. I tell you this, I would take him over Lively.
Okay.
Because he's skilled. He's 7 foot and he's shooting, you know, he shot 80% from the free throw line. He was 56, 38, 80. Like, that dude can shoot it.
Give me like two or three players that you're hoping are there at 42.
Oh. For the Wizards, I'm going to go with Julian Strother. Like, that's who I want at 42. Wing shooter, movement shooter that can also play some defense. That's what I'm looking at. But I could see scenarios where, I mean, he might at 42. That's a little further out. Maybe a Tre'Quarion Smith, maybe, even though he's a little bit on the smaller side. But we need a scoring punch off the bench, so I could see him kind of fitting that role. If they wanted to go with Jordan Walsh, a wing defender, he's not much of a shooter, but he's a guy, he's a body, he's a wing body that can guard, athletic, long arms. Even Ricky Council, I believe we brought him in for a workout. Athlete, not a shooter, but an athlete defender. I even like Jalen Clark out of UCLA. Like he just competes, defender. Again, not a shooter, but that's why these guys are in the second round, right? They're upperclassmen. They're not really shooters, so they drop down to this round. So that's kind of what you're working with.
Sure. I was thinking about this just now, but I remember the year when Mitchell Robinson was coming out, and there was some talk of him going top 10 or even being a lottery pick. And I remember that year, that's who I wanted at 15. And now that, like, for example, like Lively has slipped out of your top 30, and I'm sure someone will take him in the first round, but Mitchell Robinson didn't go until pick when, like 30 or 40 something, like
35 or something.
Yeah. So it's like, maybe if he falls a decent amount, then maybe you can package 42 and Gafford or Denny or whoever and move up and maybe try and get Lively at the end of the first round if that's a player who's available.
Yeah, so Mitchell Robinson was pick 36. In that 2018.
And Bobo, where did Bobo go?
Oof. Too damn low. Where was he go? Where did he go? I want to say Bobo went in like the 50s, man.
And Claxton was a low pick.
Yep. And see, that's where I would have Lively. Like I have him in that range, that top of your top of the second round.
Right.
Because I just think for me in the first round, I'm leaning skill, shot creation, shooting over rim running big.
Right. Because you can find them.
Yeah, rim running bigs are a dime a dozen, man. Like I can find that anywhere. So it's not to say I don't think they're going to be good or even starter level players, but it's just the value of them. They're kind of like NFL running backs.
Running backs. Yes, I was going to say the same thing. Yes, it is exactly the same thing. Like you can find them. Like it's funny listening to Saquon Barkley go off about the market and stuff, and it's like it's just like it's nothing personal, man. It's just how the league views the position. It's nothing personal. So.
Simple as that. I mean, because the only reason I had Trice there in the top 30 is because his playmaking. Yeah. He's just such a bully scoring down on the block that I just couldn't ignore that. But if he was just a typical rim runner that just set screens and dunked and rebounded, I'm not putting that type of player in the top 30. I'm just not doing it.
Well, this has been a lengthy episode today. The fans that enjoy hearing this or have a long commute or maybe have a summer vacation trip coming up, I'm sure will enjoy listening to something this long if their significant other or friend or whoever can put up with us long enough. But I wanted to thank you guys for listening to another episode. As always, rate us 5 stars, leave us a review, subscribe if you're not subscribed. But thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.